Lace up your boots and grab your mouthguards. It's time for the Rugby Wrap, the podcast about all things Western Force and the game we love.
Well, hello and welcome to the Rugby Wrap. Thanks to Leap Strategies. Great to have you with us. As always, my name is Mick Collis. Joining me as he does at this time every week, Wallaby 735, Mitchell Hardy. Mitch, good to see you.
Good to see you, boys. I'm still trying to get over the weekend's results. I thought I'd pick six from six, but alas, the Force came good. All of a sudden, I'm calling for drug testing. I don't know whether I should drug test the Reds or drug test the Force. I'm a bit conflicted.
Yeah, we'll get to that one very soon. And the king of corporate hospitality, Heath Tasman.
Making me feel very welcome as always, Mickey. Great to see you as well, Mitch.
Yeah, I was looking forward to seeing the photos of the buffet on Saturday night, Heath, but they never came through.
I told you, I try to keep it open for Mick as long as I possibly can, but when they know that he's not in attendance,
they lock it down straight away.
As they should.
Well, as we all know, Rugby Australia, it's not where we'd like it to be, and there are lots of people with lots of ideas as to how we can turn the ship around. So one such group made up of people small in number but rich in rugby experience is the Supporters of Australian Rugby Reform. Now, as reported by Mark Drummond in The Raw today, being Wednesday, the group has released a paper titled The Major Issues of Concern, which highlights many of the issues and also provides various suggestions to help the game get back on track in Australia. Now, one of the people associated with the Supporters of Australian Rugby Reform is Jeff Stook, OAM, and he joins us now. Stookie, thanks for your time on the Rugby Wrap.
Thanks very much. Good to see you guys again. So, Small correction there, mate, without beating my chest. I got an AM 2 years ago. You didn't see that.
Sorry, mate. I'll have a peg. Oh, sorry about that. I need to update my my little Jeff Stook.
Leave it out or get the right one.
Yeah, all right.
He's running out of room in the Stookie library to put all the medals.
I can see it on the wall behind him.
my apologies to Jeff Stook. I am. So now, Stookie, the Supporters of Australian Rugby Reform, how did it come about?
Well, a few of us, like many people in Australian rugby right now, are not happy where things are at. And as you would also hear, there's complaint after complaint from various people in rugby or around rugby. But complaining's one thing, doing something's another. So Dick Marks, who you'd all know, and I stay in fairly regular contact, Russ Tullock, a former Wallaby, and a few other people who remain nameless, we were approached by a guy named Paul Johnson, who's an associate professor at UTS. And his special areas are governance, sports administration, and leisure and tourism. And he also wrote the constitutions for Oceanic Rugby. And I think he also did Samoa and Tonga. So he's quite involved on the governance side of the game. And there's another gentleman from the Graduate School of Management who's one of the lecturers there. He may be a professor as well. He's also very keen to see changes made. So we got our heads together. We drafted up the issues of concern and put some suggestions together. I had a fairly heavy involvement in that. And then the covering letter, which you would have read, was primarily authored by Paul. So what we're saying is quite simply that if you're not happy with the way things are, do something to change it. From a governance perspective, the only people, organisations that can do anything are the voting members of Rugby Australia. And they're the member unions, the super teams, and the Rupa. Now, two of those super teams don't have a vote right now because they've been taken over by Australian Rugby. That's the Rebels and the Waratahs. However, there's still 14 voting delegates to Rugby Australia. And they need to grab hold of the organisation and say, right, we need to shake it up and turn things around, because a lot of things have happened are totally unsatisfactory to both people like myself, but also the majority in the rugby community. So that's how it all started, Mick.
So you talk about the governance. So there's a statement that comes out with the paper. It says that the Board of Rugby Australia that either created or failed to rectify Australia's rugby problems is not the appropriate group to fix them. We need a spill of the Rugby Australia board and a constitutional review, including a change to put appropriately qualified and skilled directors in their place. So a full spill, is that too drastic, do you think?
Well, I don't think it's too drastic, but I don't think it's going to happen because there's only three directors up for re-election. There's also two vacancies, one created by Hamish resigning, and the other by Phil Wall becoming CEO. So there are five spots up for election. The problem you therefore have is that when they elect directors to the Australian board, the voting members are only given a nominee from the nominations committee to fill each spot. You don't have a choice. So it's take it or leave it. Now, what we're suggesting is that we don't take it and we reject their nomination. If those three who wish to be re-elected put their hand up, that they be rejected. There's a requirement for anyone to be elected to the board, from, even though they're a nominee, they have to get 2/3 majority of the general meeting. So that's a start point, as we said. There's got to be a change. Because one of the things that is a real concern to me is Hamish McLennan was asked to come on board as the chairman. He came on and he was the guy, through his personal efforts, that got a broadcaster. Through the Castle area, we lost Foxtel. Well, they came back to us after being rejected the first time and with an amount that wasn't satisfactory. So they walked away from that. We had no one. We lost Qantas. We know what happened there. And it was Hamish who basically was able to get a broadcaster and a naming rights sponsor. I also understand he was instrumental in getting Harvey Norman on board. So he's quite influential and quite well connected. When all the issues over Eddie and different things came up and then the member unions indicated they were unhappy with Hamish, they moved to sort of get rid of him. Well, the board then, in my view, should have stood behind him because everything Hamish did, they endorsed. And when the pressure went on, they decided to remove his chair. Well, when that happened, he then resigned as a director. So to me, all the issues that have come up in recent times fall squarely on the shoulders of the current board.
So I'll get this one away early. So the paper, it says the previous chairman, which is Hamish, can't be the scapegoat. So now I don't know Hamish McLennan. I've never met him. But from where I sat, just as a punter, he seemed happy to take credit when things went well, and he seemed quick to pass blame when they didn't. Did he have anything to do with this paper, and does he have anything to do with the group itself?
Well, firstly, I disagree with you. Yes, he was happy to take credit, but B, he never passed on blame. He copped it sweet. He's had absolutely nothing to do with this paper at all, nothing whatsoever. I've not spoken to Hamish. I know him, and he's a pretty impressive guy, but he's had nothing to do with this at all. And we're not out defending Hamish one way or the other. What we're saying is whatever the decisions were, they weren't captain's picks. They were board decisions. Now, okay. Even the appointment of Eddie, it was endorsed by their so-called rugby committee on the Rugby Australia board, which was Dan, Phil and Hamish.
Okay, because again, there was a quote, and I'll leave this alone, but there was a quote, it just said, the recent removal of the chair of the Rugby Australia board presents a major concern to many. Joined the board to be the chair, and this was after some major upheaval at Rugby Australia and the brief tenure of his predecessor. Also, Rugby Australia did not have a broadcaster or a major sponsor, and he was clearly instrumental in securing both, because that sounds like something he would have written himself. So that was why my question was.
I'll take credit for that. I wrote that.
Okay.
No, that's why I firmly believe. You don't have a guy come in, but the place was in a mess, and take some initiatives with the endorsement of the board, and then things didn't go quite the way I would have liked, and a lot of people wouldn't have liked. I didn't agree with some of the decisions down the track, but nevertheless, he can't be held fully responsible, and there's a board sitting there either saying nothing or too weak to stand up.
Yeah, because the rumours floating around was that he was basically making decisions on his own without the board's sign off. And again, I don't know how things work.
Now, the Eddie appointment, for instance, I spoke to one of their rugby committee who said to me, we fully endorsed Eddie. Okay, didn't work, but we know Eddie and we were qualified. I also chair the National Technical Advisory Committee for Rugby, and we've had 3 years of frustration. We wrote an initial paper after getting feedback from all the member unions and super teams, and we had 12 recommendations. That was reduced to 5 when the new CEO came on board, and they never got implemented. So there's a lot of frustration there. But I felt that particular committee could at least have provided some due diligence or assisted in the due diligence process regarding Eddie or anybody else. Now, we're not saying we should say yay or no to Eddie, but we can give some feedback. On my committee, I had one guy who'd been Eddie's assistant, one guy who'd grown up with him at Randwick, and another guy who was on the Queensland board when Eddie was coach up there briefly. So we weren't about to say yay or nay. We'll just give some input to what for their considerations. But we were told, and I was told, that they were very comfortable with what they decided, and they're very comfortable with relying on the rugby committee of the board.
Yeah, okay. Now, the paper makes a lot of points. Look, the majority won't get any arguments about the significant disconnect between the clubs and the elite rugby. That's certainly true. But then there's one bit you talk about the youth pathways, that they've been compromised by the elimination or degradation of the elite national program through the AIS and reliance on inferior state academies. So what would you like to see if you don't want to have these academies, what would you like to see in their place?
Well, we had the National Under-21 program that some of you will be familiar with. I'm not sure if Mitch was involved in that. But certainly those programs, they were controlled centrally through ARU as it was at the time. And then the programs they had to work to were delivered at club level and at member union level. And then once or twice a year, there'd be a 5-day camp in Canberra with all those who are part of the AOS programs. The issue we really have is the quality of the coaching and the fact that these players these days are not playing enough rugby. They get identified and put a star on their bum when they're about 16 or 17. They're then training in pristine environments. They can pump iron like none of us could back in our day. They can probably run faster. They're certainly a lot bigger. They can jump higher. But their skill level is not as good, and the toughness is on. Now, Eddie made a very good point one time to me, and we had a fair bit of communication while he was in the job. He said, the guys are not skilled enough or tough enough. And part of the reason for that is they don't play enough rugby. And when you've got a guy who's in an academy and you're told as a club he can play 35 minutes this week because he's had all this training during the week is rubbish. Now, that may fly in the face of what all the high performance experts have to say. All I can say is look at the results.
Yeah. So, Tess, Mitch, I'll bring you in on that one. Is that sort of something something we've spoken about before, that these kids need to play more rugby?
Oh, look, it's a whole range of things, Mickey. And like, I've got a lot of respect for Jeff. He's been inside the boardroom and he's sat on a number of boards and committees across his very successful business career. So, I think what we've got to get to the point of here is, how is the sport being governed as a whole is really what's the crux of this paper is all about. So with an AGM coming up, and this is what I sort of want to quiz you, Jeff, is what are you actually getting at as far as that constitutional reform? Because obviously Australian rugby has gone through a fair bit of constitutional reform over recent years. What is it that you're really, this paper is really searching for as part of that constitutional reform? Is it to bring back the powers of the states and territories and remove the nominated positions, or is it more about having the people who are involved with rugby run rugby?
Well, firstly, when you say the power, theoretically the power still rests with the voting members.
Yep.
I believe they should be deciding who is going to be the board to represent their interests at a national level.
So going back to that, removing the nominated positions and having more of a state and territory representative model.
Well, no, not representative. No, that's not wrong. We have a vote. No. But they get a vote. They have a choice.
Yeah.
Now, as you probably read, I did 5 years on the board. It was pretty frustrating most of the time. But I was elected by the other states. Back in the day, Queensland got two directors. New South Wales got two, and they might have got three each. And the other states got one. And I had to match off against a guy from ACT at the time. And I got elected. I was subsequently re-elected as independent, and then I pulled the pin. But at the end of the day, I believe that we have to allow the states and the super teams, the voting members, and River, the voting members, to decide who's going to represent them at a national level. Not a nomination committee of three that's chaired by the chairman of the Australian Rugby Board or Rugby Australia Board, and they are the only names put up for consideration.
How have they got to that position? Those, the people that get nominated by the nominations committee.
Well, they're put forward by Rugby Australia, and they have to be endorsed by a general meeting. But the general meeting has three choices.
It's a tick and flick.
There's three names. There's the three.
Yeah, so, it's a nominations committee go out and sort of canvass and do a short list, and then they put them forward.
If they do, we don't know what's going to happen with the three up for re-election. There's five vacancies coming up. Three for re-election. Now, whether they're put forward by the nominations committee, I don't know. One would expect they would be, given it's chaired by the chairman of the board. And then there's two other vacancies. So they need to identify them. So I don't know who the nominations are, but I would suspect by the 8th of April we'll have to know, because the notice of meeting for the AGM would go out in that agenda that would have to have the nominees.
Yeah, but it goes back also to the crux of the system that Jeff was talking about earlier as well, when we're talking about the old days of the RAS program. But also, I was having a coffee the other week with a very reputable coach that's been doing the rounds, and he was recalling how successful the gold program was, about how the gold program was a good stepping stone for Australian rugby. And I can guarantee you that if you went through the current crop of good Australian rugby players at the moment, they would have been involved in that gold program at some way, shape or form. A bit like what we talk about with NRC, the gold program was almost that bridging program for young kids being TID'd, but it was a bit more broader and grew the base more in that TID area, rather than just have the schoolboy state teams being picked. It was sort of that next tier down that really grew the base, but you pulled the pin because it was a financial impost on their bottom line on the gold program. Yet we can find money for rugby league players, and someone is making decisions based around what they think is best for the game, without really think about what is best for the game. And that's where I have a beef, is that we still get focused on the Sawalis of this world and how much we're paying for him, and Joseph, the rugby league converts and Suiali Vunivalu's. We're wasting so much money on players, and I'll say it openly, Jeff, that Rupa has to take some sort of accountability for these inflated salaries these players have been playing, because I 100% agree with you. Players need to be playing more rugby, but they need to be paid less. And then there needs to be more equalisation of, when you look at a guy like Corey O'Toole, who's playing for the Brumbies at the moment, he'd be the first guy I'd pick in the Brumbies every week. He's on one of the lower salaries.
Yeah. I totally agree with you, man.
We're wasting our money on $1.5 million a year for some rugby league kid.
The statistic I put in a paper where Sawali, untried rugby player at that level, who I understand only played in that game with the Roosters in America because someone else got injured, he's getting $1.2 million a year. The total Rugby Australia grant to the New South Wales Rugby Union is $1.2 million.
Yeah, so a whole grassroots program.
And that's in the paper, and that highlights where, from the top, we've got so many people in that high-performance area. Hmm. The other thing that we recommend, this is separate to the paper, but I'll take the opportunity to explain it. We recommended that we have a national coaching director and that all the coaching functions within Rugby Australia come under the one umbrella, because you've got community, your coach education under community, you've got all these high-level coaching types in the professional area. They're all fractured.
Yeah.
And so much of our coaching is now done online. So we've been advocating that more should be done face-to-face, but yep. It should all be consolidated, because the developing of Wallabies like the Mitch Hardys of this world, they start when they're 6 or 7. They've got to get quality coaching there. It's got to go all the way through, and it's got to be consistent. We're not getting that. We're not getting it. The coach education programs are not in sync with what they're doing at the professional levels.
Yeah, I totally agree, Jeff. There needs to be more national contact. And, you know, I go back, and I know it's easy to go back to the old back in my day sort of business, but it's what worked and it what does work with for the sport. So stop trying to take shortcuts and stop trying to sort of make commercially based decisions in a boardroom or an executive meeting that has broader impacts across the game, where they could be actually a little bit more transparent about their decision making, a bit more consultative as well. And that's where I think Jeff's got some really valid points about why don't you use the expertise that's on hand, whether it be an advisory committee or a rugby committee, to help you make good, justifiable decisions. And again, putting Australian rugby at the foremost and pointy end of the decision-making process, not what's best for the Wallabies, but it's what's best for rugby in Australia. And I keep saying it time and time again, rant over.
But shouldn't that be the role of the board?
Yeah, should be, but it's not. And this is my problem I have with it, is that the board is getting too pointy end focus all the time. Mm. And like, we can throw stones at Hamish McLennan, and I was probably the worst of that because of his mouthpiece role that he had. But the board, I agree with Jeff, the board also has to be responsible for that. For ultimately, the buck stops at the board, and the CEO is responsible to the board. So that's where it stops. Like, I don't see how they can keep passing the buck around in a circle. It's like pass the parcel at times. And yeah, okay, Hamish copped the brunt, and you know, he was the mouthpiece that needed to cop the brunt. But I kind of agree with Jeff. There needs to be some other fallout of this.
Hmm. If, yeah. I think there's dimensions made there, but if you're playing in a team and your performance is relatively poor, your outcome, your results are poor, there's a fair chance you get dropped. And why are the administrators any different? But so, you know, we're not here chasing heads. We're looking at a whole shake-up of the system. And if people are involved there now, probably should be. Some of the priorities that they have, I find sort of bewildering. I mean, we spend more time looking at the game extensions, game variations, and the ones that don't generate the revenue. Now, revenue is a huge issue for us. They're borrowing millions. There's a risk factor there. What if the Lions Tour got called off? What if the Rugby World Cup doesn't produce the numbers we like? We've still got this massive debt, this massive facility. So to me, what we have to look after is our revenue generation. So we've got to make sure we're bringing players through that have the skills, or we source players who have the skills to generate revenue. Now, Phil Waugh made this statement the other day, 86% of the revenue to Australian rugby is directly or indirectly comes out of men's 15s. And when you hear discussion on rugby in Australia, you wouldn't think that.
Because that was the next point I was going to make, because you talk about they need a detailed forensic analysis, they need to put a razor gang, take into the costs. The Wallabies and the super teams must be adequately funded because they do generate that revenue, as you've spoken. It said, attention must be given to competitions and game variations that currently incur a cost. Until they generate revenue, the expenditure on them must be conservative and measured. So are you talking about the women's programs here?
I'm talking about women's, sevens. Sevens is probably the classic. I mean, sevens is an event. I understand sevens about breaks even now, but you've got to remember, when you have an event, you've got 20 or 30 teams competing, there's a fair bit of spoil to be shared around. So you're not going to make a truckload of money out of sevens. You get some promotion out of it, which is good, and it seems to be the game that women are preferring to play. But, you know, we've got to be very mindful that when you've got such a small number of players, you put only a certain amount of finances can go that way, and you can't underfund your revenue generators. Now, I made the point that when I set up the Force, we got 4.5 million as our share of broadcasting and to compensate us for warehousing and developing Wallabies. 4.5 million. Last year, the super teams got 3.8 million. Now, the salaries and all the costs have gone up enormously. So the Super Rugby model is a fail model. They can't make any money unless you've got, we know the Waratahs are broke. We know the Brumbies are struggling. The Force has a benefactor. Without a benefactor, they'd be in strife. And the Rebels, we've heard a lot about. I understand Queensland's about break even. So you've got a fail model there. And yet we've got $130 million came in 2022. And you look at one area, it says other, about $46 million. So, you know, we've got to go and look at how where we're spending our money. And as Mitch touched on earlier, so much money going to players, we can't afford it. And I've mentioned in the paper, South Africa chose to say, right, forget it. You want to go and play overseas, fine. But the deal is you've got to be released for tests. They win two World Cups. And to me, we may have to do that. Because right now, our models are not sustainable.
Because you talk about the women was one of the things that you mentioned. Because in this current climate, can Rugby Australia not afford not to have a women's program though? Because you've got, we've seen what's happened with the Matildas. We know the AFL women have got a massive program, the Rugby League women. If rugby got rid of the women's program, do you think that would have a negative?
I'm not saying get rid of the program. I'm not saying get rid of the program. What I'm saying is you've got to imagine how you spend money on it.
Because I don't think, I don't know, I know the women certainly, look, again, I don't know how much they're on, but it's not massive coin, so.
I don't know exactly how much they cost. What I'm saying is we've got to be considered and measured in what we spend.
Yeah.
But that goes across the board.
As you mentioned, with player payments as well. If Australian rugby's got a limit on what they can pay, and if you don't want to fit in that limit.
We don't pay $1.2 million dollars for any player, in my view.
No, we shouldn't even be paying over $500,000, in my view. You don't get the return on the investment. Like Michael Hooper's getting paid an exorbitant amount of money at the moment to commentate on Stan Sports. Like it's obscene.
Enough, many years ago when I was still on the board, I had a discussion with Michael Checker in Perth. We didn't agree on quite a few things, but one thing he said to me at the time, talking about Will Jennier, and he said, I don't mind him going overseas. They can pay the bills and we'll get him back for test matches, which summed it up for me. It made a lot of sense. If you can't afford to pay these guys, why are we going out and using debt finance to pay for players?
Mm.
It doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
And to me, it's inappropriate that a board would allow that.
Would you blow up Super Rugby, Stukey?
No.
So what do you do? It's an unsustainable model. What do we do?
Well, you've got to look at, I haven't got all the financials in front of you. The financials of Australian Rugby are kept pretty secret. Yeah. We still don't know how much they spent on the World Cup.
Mm.
We know how much they overspent, but not what we actually spent. So the finances, I've got no idea. We're solvent because we've got a debt facility, but our balance sheet, I'd hate to think what it is. The thing is that until I knew what the finances are overall, and then look at where you can make those cuts, because I'm sure there's plenty of places we can make cuts. There's probably plenty of places where there's duplication between the super teams, the member unions, and Rugby Australia. And to me, I'm not going to try to give you all the answers here tonight, but as a matter of principle, you need to do that analysis. We did it a few years ago, and we made huge savings. That's all crept up now, but I can remember when I first joined the board, a number of guys were commissioned to, it was David Vaux, and another fellow who used to be at Sydney Uni. They did a review of the costs within Rugby Australia, and there was a big culling there. So I think the whole thing's crept up again.
Yeah, because $130 million, that's a fair whack of money, but only the Super Rugby teams are getting, what, four each. That's $20 million. Where's the other 110 going? I'd love to see the other where that $40 million went to.
Well,
other.
Again, they've got to produce the accounts for the general meeting, and they've got to produce a balance sheet. But also, we were told we'd get the community was told we would get the SAC report. We didn't. We got the recommendations, but not the report.
Yeah.
We got the overrun on the World Cup, but not the actual cost of the World Cup. So there's so many things that we just don't know.
Yeah.
And we'll see what the financials look like when they come out and how much information is provided.
Yeah, bit of transparency would be nice. Now, so you said there's a lot of points raised. If you could, if they'd let you change one thing out of the paper that you could implement, what would the one thing be?
I think in the current climate, the first thing we have to do is change the board.
Be the board.
Yeah. I haven't got the people. I'm not saying who should be on it or who shouldn't be, but we probably need a fresh set of eyes on Australian rugby from a fresh board. Now, I'm not offering any criticism of any one particular board member. Look at the combined outcomes and what they've done overall. I think we need a fresh set of eyes, a fresh set of behaviours. That would be the start point, in my view.
Yep. Tessa Mitch, anything before we let him go?
No, the man just speaks. The man speaks some sense.
No. No, I think
there's too much there for me.
I feel like it's a bit of a case of deja vu, though, with some of this stuff, because it feels like we keep going round and round in circles talking about similar things, but we don't actually see the end result. And sometimes we kind of get there, but then it all goes south again. Like, I think, you know, there's early signs from Phil Waugh that, you know, he's got strong leadership. You know, certainly Dan Herbert came out initially as part of his pitch to come on as chair to have a bit of reform around the rugby system and the rugby structure, but we haven't seen anything being implemented yet. There's enough evidence out there to suggest that there's an untapped wealth of support still at club level out there, with vibrant competition in Brisbane, Sydney and Canberra at least. So there's enough grassroots viable support out there to say that there's still a really good opportunity to turn things around if they look at it from a systemic point of view and having a good rugby system. You know, bringing in guys like David Nussafora, Peter Horn are good signs, but then you need the leadership at the top to make good, clear, strategic and financial decisions for the organisation. And I think that's probably the last piece of the puzzle that needs to fall into place over the next coming months, because I'm still very sceptical they're going to still fall into the same mistakes, that they're more looking at the shiny bright lights and trying to get the headline rather than actually look at the systemic issues within the sport itself. And the opportunities the sport presents itself are still very, very rich and vast. And like I've been talking about the female participation in the sport, our rugby sevens girls are our flagship team across the world at the moment. Like, I couldn't give two hoots about the men's team, to be honest. If we don't field a men's team, the sevens, I really couldn't care, because the quality of player that are playing in that competition at the moment, they would be lucky to make first grade teams in most competitions. So why invest into it? I'm with Jeff. Why invest into something that is a waste of time? Like, we don't have any underpinning sevens programs in Australia. There's nothing there's no feeders to it. So why are we bothering with it? Whereas at least for the girls, I can see how we can create a system there to be the best in the world at it.
Now, I might get Howard down. However, we've just appointed a new high-performance manager, Peter Horn. I question whether you want to bring in David Nussafor or anybody else in other than him. I think we're over that. We've got a high-performance ladies person as well, so a women's person. To me, I'd say, right, Peter Horn, you've got the job.
Yeah.
And you run the show.
Yeah.
Just don't bring in other people that cost money. You do it. And I think we're just overloaded with all these people. I haven't seen the latest structure of Rugby Australia right now, But it probably goes down to the super teams too, where they're overloaded with coaches and different things.
Yeah.
I think we've got to get
look at how many people Eddie had, Jeff. Like Eddie had a cast of thousands in the room.
What we've got to do is actually simply have structures that we can afford.
Yeah, that, I think that's the bottom line. It's what we can afford to do.
Have structures and players we can afford.
Yeah. Look, it's always good to catch up with you. We love your passion and your enthusiasm for the game. Well, you do want to see it back on top. Hopefully that's not too far away. So thanks again for joining us on the Rugby Wrap.
Thank you, guys. All the best. Cheers.
Thank you. So that was Jeff Stook, one of the people involved with the supporters of Australian rugby reform. So what do you reckon?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's timely to throw a grenade every now and then, especially leading up to an AGM.
Because is it another paper?
Nothing,
you mentioned
controversial.
Is it another paper that won't, nothing will happen? Like, remember the captain's letter? Did anything?
You usually get a reaction from these type of things, Mickey. The captain's letter got a reaction.
Yes.
You know, you look at the spill that got rid of Hamish McLennan from the states and territories. That, you know, there's always a reaction. These things are timed for a reason and delivered for a reason. There will be a reaction to this. I've got no two ways about it at the AGM. But it's whether or not we get that financial reform and the systemic change that we're really looking for will be the crux of it.
I think there's a lot of transparency because, like, with those board members, that these are the ones you have to vote for, and they don't release all the financial stuff. There just seems a lot of closed shop stuff.
Smoke and mirrors, yeah. Shove everything you don't want the people to know about under the line item of other.
Hmm.
But that's what Suki said, though. He just wants, it's not about heads rolling and everything like that. It's just having that transparency and people like having a choice as well.
Yeah, and we need it. But
people still haven't answered the question about the World Cup. So we went $2.6 million over budget.
Who
authorised that? And no one's come out and said, it was me, I stuffed up.
Yeah.
They go, it was circumstances. No, someone authorised it, someone approved it, someone was responsible for it. Who was it? Just open and honest.
You just dropped out. When you're talking about the $2.6 million over budget, it still hasn't come out. And who put their hand up?
Who was responsible? Just come out and say it.
Hmm.
Like, Chris, is it a coincidence that Chris Webb exited the World Cup stage, left straight away post World Cup, but he was the general manager who was in charge of the Wallabies team? Was he in charge of the budget? Just come out and say it.
Hmm. Yeah.
You know, like, there's no one's going to burn him at the stake. It's just like, this is what happened. These are the decisions was made, and it was a stuff up.
Yeah.
No one's ever been burnt at the stake for making a good honest mistake. If it's a mistake, if it's just completely taking the piss, that's another thing. But at the end of the day, the buck stops with the CEO, and even further, the buck stops with the board because they have oversight of the organisation. That's what their job is.
Mm. And I think that's the crux of what Stookie and the supporters of Australian rugby reform are on about. But it's great that people still care enough to put these things together. Look, we'll take a very short break and be back to have a look at round 5 of Super Rugby right after this.
G'day, I'm Connor Jenkins from Leap Strategies. Can you imagine the sort of stuff hackers would find if they got into Heath Tessman's computer?
Crouch! Bind! Set!
But unlike Tess, your business has valuable data that needs protection. That's where we come in. Leap Strategies is all about keeping your business data safe and sound from those online threats. Ready to secure your digital assets? Call Leap Strategies on 1300 77 LEAP or visit leapstrategies.com.au.
So thanks again to Leap Strategies and great voiceover work there by Connor Jenkins, who's just got engaged to Lani on Saturday. So congratulations to him. And apparently we'll be doing a live recording of the Rugby Wrap podcast at his wedding. So I'm sure his new missus will love that one.
Looking forward to that.
Who needs an MC? Exactly. Mick Collis, that's the only MC you need.
Exactly. Jeez. We're doing
weddings,
live
parties and anything. Exactly. Mick Collis, call me.
So to Super Rugby, and let's kick it off with the Western Force causing the upset of the round to knock off the Reds 40 points to 31. And isn't a week a long time in rugby?
Oh, It was for, well, the first 4 weeks were forever. They were a very long time if you're a Western Force fan. But yeah, what a game. It was one of those games as well where it wasn't, the Reds weren't bad. The Reds were still quite good. Were they their best? Maybe not. But I think a lot of that was because the pressure and the enthusiasm the Force showed to really put them under that kind of duress. And I don't know. It's one of those ones. If you're chrono after the game, what are you celebrating? You're popping the champagne, or are you just going, boys?
What happened?
Has this been all year?
Yeah.
Come on. This is all we've been asking for.
Someone sprinkled the magic fairy rugby dust on them, and they went, "Oh, this is how you play the game."
Oh, I can still rugby.
Right. This is how it goes. But yeah, the Reds weren't great. I mean, they were never got out of third gear. I thought the not laziness. Well, yeah, it was kind of this laziness air about them through the game, you know, and it's sort of indicated by Saru Iru was probably the most prevalent example during the game where he's carrying the ball in one hand into contact and losing the ball into contact. Mm. Same with Vunivalu, which is nothing unusual that he turnovers ball, but it was just that ease of turnover that just kept the Western Force in possession. And what they were able to do is grow confidence. Mm. And then off the fast starts they have been doing in previous weeks, they were able to then sustain the momentum, sustain the pressure, and then finish the game. Even though they did get the wobbles there a couple of times in the game, but they were able to sustain it. But the Reds just didn't get out of third gear. And I actually legitimately thought they took the Force as an easy win. They weren't on their money. They lacked a physical presence on the field, even with Harry Wilson dropping those kickoffs. I mean, excuse mate, if someone did that in a second grade game down at local club rugby, they'd be off the field in 5 minutes saying, Take a seat on the pine, boy. Mm. You can't drop that stuff. That is just unforgivable. If Joe Schmidt's watching that, he's going, Harry, you ain't been in the Wallabies this year, boy. You can't catch the ball. Like, that's unforgivable stuff.
Yeah.
Like, that is just basic stuff. Yeah. And that just killed the Reds. But all credit to the Force, massive turn up. Where's that been the last few weeks?
Yeah.
Now, where to from here?
Because all the stuff they tried against Moana Pacifica, it actually came off on the weekend. Some of the tries, they scored some great tries. Donaldson, again, I reckon he's just in great touch.
Yeah. Donaldson and Carlo Tozzano are the two best players for the Force at the moment. Mm. Carlo getting through a mountain of work, and he was rewarded for his couple of tries on the weekend, but he's getting through a lot of work, and then Donaldson is continually breaking the line. And that's what in previous years they've missed that player to continually break the line, and he's continually doing that, and he's doing it from a variety of different players across the field.
Yeah,
but I think the move from Harry Potter of fullback's a good one. Bailey Kunzel, who's never played on the wing before, getting a double on the ding-a-ling.
Well, how hard's the wing?
You can tell, though, can't you?
How hard is it?
Yeah. How hard's the wing?
Go over there. Just,
catch and put the ball down over the white line. It's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah.
Maybe he should be paid $1.2 million. but you know, just doing the basics well, and, you know, they combined very well as a unit right across the field. The Nick White-Donaldson combination for me on the weekend was a real winner.
Yeah, I was going to say that, that as we're talking about Donaldson and Tozzano, I reckon that's Nick White's best game of rugby that I've seen him play for some time, the way he managed the game, the pace at which he was able to keep the game at, but then, like, the quality of his delivery as well, like, it was just on a plate for those guys all around him the whole time. And I don't think it's just Ben Donaldson's running game as well. Like, the way he managed that game, like the kicking at the right time, even that second half, they got into that long kicking duel and the fans weren't happy with it. But that was one of those moments where
pays off.
The Force didn't have momentum and they said, okay, well, we're just going to wait and play for the right end of the field. And, you know, young Liner just got sick of kicking the ball back. He said, well, he's the one that blinked first, ran it back. They turned the ball over, like, didn't make any yards, was in trouble. They get back football, turn the ball over next phase. Like, those little moments there, the Force was winning. And Ben Donaldson, I think his mentality and how he managed that game, it really stood up. He's growing in that spot.
Yeah. Mm. And the interesting thing for me too is if I'm looking at that game, next time Tom Liner runs out for the Reds, guess where I'm going with all my attack? Because he met, and don't want to be disparaging the young fella, but he missed a lot of tackles.
He should,
like little slip-offs that you just exasperated and exasperated and exasperated. Hunter Pasami was a bit rusty after having a couple of weeks off, I thought, and went missing for a little bit of the game. But that young Tom Liner, I think he's going to really struggle to hold down that position from here on in, because Lachlan Phillips is a much better defender. And at that level, you can't afford to be missing one-on-ones or slipping off, because good teams will make you pay. And I did pick that up very strongly in that game, that Tom Liner's defensive effort on the weekend was really exposed.
Yeah,
really,
and they're badly. Good teams that have got bigger, more physical forwards and backs, because you know the Force are nowhere near one of the biggest teams in the competition. And you're not talking out of school there at all, Mitchie. Any attack coach should be, you know, trying to load up on the 10 anyway. But if he's a bit of a weaker defender, you're sending guys to the line, keep Paisami out of there.
Yeah.
Keep him out and get him making one-on-ones.
Load it up. So Les, it's a good challenge for Les Kiss now, because he's been exposed in a couple of areas now by losing a game. So when you're winning each game, your weaknesses aren't necessarily exposed as much. But as soon as you lose one, your weaknesses really shine out. So it'll be interesting to see how he responds this week.
And Tess, the pack was good.
Pack was good, and especially, you know, losing a couple forwards early on as well. The replacements came on, just really, really stood up. Especially like Reid Prinsep, he was just big and physical, and he's got that starting spot again this weekend. So he comes in, and Tom Franklin, like, getting through the 80 minutes as well. So he's going to be partnering Faifua in the second row this weekend. I'm sure, like, the plan wasn't for him, would have been for Williams to be able to play that whole 80 out. But, you know, Franklin steps into the role, and I don't know, I'm sure it's in the mailbag or it's coming, but, you know, a new lock.
Yeah,
it's jumping onto the bench for them as well.
It's coming. So, no, a great result for the Western Force. And, look, I'm very happy for the players and obviously Crono and the fans as well. So 40 points to 31 over the Reds. In the other games, the Hurricanes disposing of the Rebels 54 to 28.
Yeah, again, Hurricanes, they've proven themselves as a competition front runner this year, Mickey.
Yeah.
The Rebels didn't have an answer. But the Hurricanes this year, with some of that young blood that's coming through, you know, and they didn't have their best 15 on the field, in my view. No Roy Guard. And so forth, but you know, they've just got some outstanding players.
And then we talk about a week being a long time in rugby. Moana Pacifica winning last week 60-21, Brumbies destroying them on the weekend.
Yeah, went into gear, the Brums. But again, like, what I really liked about the Brumbies games on the weekend, Harrison Goddard, very good pass. And his pass, I think, is better than a Lonergan pass at the moment at 9. And he gave them that extra space that they needed to get their front foot attack. Charlie Carl being back in at number 8, big advantage. Darcy Swain did an excellent job in that leadership role. And I think that was where they were struggling a little bit, about that leadership around the paddock. Darcy Swain, I thought, did a very good job in his first hit out as captain and in the second row there, because not only did he bring the physicality in need against a Moana Pacifica, he led from the front as well. So I think their team looked a lot more balanced on the weekend than previous weeks, and they're a bit more clinical.
And then over in Fiji, the Drua, 39-36 over the Waratahs in Golden Point. The Waratahs, they missed a drop goal attempt. The Drua didn't, and 39-36, and the Fijians loved it.
That was just that was an absolute worker of a drop goal as well. It's like, ended up in his hands and just what should I do with this?
Yeah. It was bizarre, wasn't it? Completely not in the pocket. He was just going to have a run.
I'll just hack this up. It's straight over the dot. Such a beautiful way for the Drua to finish. And actually, speaking of finishing as well, you know, we love Darren Coleman on the podcast, but his words came back to haunt him with Mick Byrne, very excited about getting that victory. What was Coleman's quote a few years back? Oh, it's not like we beat the Chicago Bulls or anything like that. And Mick Byrne rocking the Chicago Bulls
hat. Chicago at the press conference.
Best match press conference was just...
That was fabulous.
Just brilliant. But then, you know, Fiji, tough to beat over there. And I keep getting ahead of myself, but I'm sure we'll touch on the challenge that awaits for the Force later.
We'll touch on that. And then the Chiefs 29, Highlanders 21. So the Chiefies looking good.
Yeah, very sharp again. Yeah, very sharp again. I mean, the Highlanders they're going to be annoying all year. They're going to win the odd game. They are a good team.
They're a really good team. And they're, you know, sitting sixth on the ladder. I don't think they've lost any games by really more than 10 or so points. The one they've lost by more than 10 was against the Blues when they left 14 points off the boot on the field anyway.
Yeah.
It's you know, the Kiwi conference is just so wide. Like, we knew at the beginning of the season the Chiefs were going to be red hot, and they are. But it was the Canes and the Highlanders that we kind of looked at tipping that we're going to kind of struggle this year with the amount of new players that they were blooding in Super Rugby and the experience that they were lacking from years gone by. And they're just absolutely turning up every week.
And one team we didn't discount, but we probably should have, the Crusaders, setting a new record, 0-5.
I did.
26 points to 6 they went down.
When did you discount them? Just wait. Yeah, when? I called it on the weekend. When?
I called it 0-5 last week. Guys, I said 0-5.
Oh, last week. It's easy to say 0-5 last week. Yeah.
At the start of the season, you're all over
them. It's the Rob Penny jinx.
Yeah, poor Rob Penny. Jeez.
He's got to go. Sack
first time in 9 years they haven't scored a try in a game of rugby.
Oh, wow.
Never gone 0-5, ever.
No, that's a new record. Yeah, they're setting new records, just not the ones they want. That's so a bit of trouble on
that. But can I just say something? Like, they're not losing by big margins, and they are missing some very significant players. Like, don't discount Will Jordan.
They lost by 20 points on the weekend.
Like, Well, that's not a lot. That's not a lot of points, rugby. Might be a lot of points down at Netherlands, Heath, but not in rugby. Will Jordan, you can't discount missing a bloke like Will Jordan because he is an enigma. Sam Whitelock, even Tamati Williams. Like, Tamati Williams, young prop on the up and up, not there this year at the moment through injury, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they lost Lee Halfpenny. He was, you know, they lost him in the very first game of the year. He was going to be coming. He was down here. He'd signed up with them as well. So, you know, they're banking on that. Yeah, he played their very first trial up in the Northern Hemisphere when they played Leinster.
Yeah.
Tore his pec.
Yeah.
So he was done. He was done before he even started, unfortunately.
He never got to Christchurch. Yeah. They've gone on a bit of tough times, but geez, you'd think they should have just chalked up a win. By now,
yeah, you'd think so. And in the Super W, the Western Force made it a double. They won 24-14 over the Reds. And I don't like rolling balls from tries or from lineouts, I should say. I've made that pretty clear. I think they should only be worth 3 points. But you need to have a look at the replay. The Western Force scored one from a lineout outside the 22. I reckon it would have been a 25-meter rolling ball to score a try. Well worth having a look at.
Ace would have been.
It wasn't the only one they scored all day as well.
He would have seen if he didn't have his head in the cup.
Yeah, he would have spilled his chop suey getting excited about that.
I was there. I probably missed it because I had my camera trained on the Super W forwards coach, Chris Heiberg, because the roll of emotions that he goes through during one of those the games, the hat. I don't know. He covers a lot of steps just getting up and having to go pick up his hat because it comes off, it gets thrown down. And then he has to just get up and go and pick it up again.
I think that was an outstanding win by the girls on the weekend. Oh,
fantastic. Yeah,
absolutely.
To get over the top of the Reds.
Yep.
They're right in it this year, the Super W girls.
Yeah, doing really well. And in the other games, the Waratahs women, they smashed last year's premiers 62 points to 21. So they're really the front runners at the moment. And then the Brumbies 24-22 over the Rebels. So looking ahead to this week, I'd love to get your tips. Mitch Hardy, will you get it's Crusaders Chiefs?
Chiefs, 9-6.
Oh, yeah, got to go.
Let it ride.
They're at home again. They're Crusaders are at home.
Chiefs, let it ride. Chiefs. 9-6.
Up the mana. Go the mana.
Okay. Sack Penny.
Waratahs, Rebels, Tupou on the bench.
That doesn't matter.
No.
Yeah. Waratahs.
Then Saturday, the Drua up against the Force, 9:05 a.m. Two changes to the Force. So Jeremy Williams, calf strain, he's out. Will Harris, the head injury protocols, he's out. Nick White will captain. So before I get your tips, so the starting the team for the Force, Ryan Coxon, Tom Horton, Santiago Medrano, Thomas Franklin and Lepeti Fafua in the second row, Tim Anstey, Carlo Tezzano and Reid Princep in the back row, Nick White skippering, Ben Donaldson at 10, Hamish Stewart and Sam Spink in the centres again, Chase Tiatia and Bailey Kunzel on the wing and Harry Potter at fullback. And then on the bench, Ben Funnell, Josh Bartlett, Tian Taukapulu, Sam Carter, Ollie Callan, Isaac Fiennes, Lele Wasser, Max Bury, and George Pullman. So Rebels, the Force against the Drua in Fiji.
Fiji, Mick. Like, I'm happy to be proven wrong. I haven't picked the Force to right yet out of 5 weeks, so what's going to change this week?
Let's hope you're wrong again this week.
I'm going Fiji at home.
You can't tip against Fiji at home. Yeah, and they've been sitting there since last Saturday, all happy and comfortable. Yeah, yeah. The boys are making their way across. So I just think it's a big ask with a big road trip ahead of them. So I hope they're not looking too far past this weekend, but it's going to be a huge challenge. And yeah, I think the Drua will get home.
And Tessa brought you rated earlier, Sam Carter, played 16 times for the Wallabies between 2014 and 2017, unveiled with the new Force signing on Monday from Leicester Tigers. Good pickup?
Yeah, great pickup. He's only 32 years of age, I think.
34, 32.
You know, as a forward, that's basically 20. Yeah, like if you're a winger and you're 26, you're past your best, but that's just into his prime. And he, I think they wanted the opportunity to come back to Australia, and unfortunately, the phone was ringing. And
is this his second stint at the Force?
No, I don't think so.
No, he'd only been at the Brumbies before.
Yeah, Brums.
Because Force A. He played a couple of games with Force A, I reckon, back in 2010 or 2011.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Before he went to the Brums. Him and Nick Phibbs played Force A before they went to the Brumbies back in the day.
There you go. So he's coming back, which is – and game ready, which is terrific.
Well, that's the most important thing. I don't know at the last game, Isaac Rodder said that he was going to be available for that next game against the Crusaders, their next home game. So I don't know if this is kind of showing that maybe there's some question marks around that.
Yeah.
But he was here. He was here prior to last week's game. So prior to Jeremy Williams being injured, Sam Carter was here training with the team. So it hasn't been a response to that. Maybe just trying to build out the depth because Thrushy just keeps saying no.
Then in the other games, Moana Pacifica against the Blues.
Nah, Blues.
Yeah.
Highlanders Hurricanes.
Hurricanes.
Whoa, I might go the Landers at home.
I'll go
the Landers.
Can we clarify that? Is it Invercargill?
Highlanders home ground.
Oh, at Dunedin. Invercargill. Yeah. Okay. No, I can't stick with the Canes.
And then in the last one, which should be a beauty, the Reds against the Brumbies. Vunivalu has been dropped, in case that's going to affect your selections, Mitch.
Oh, God. Thank God for that. Is that the Reds?
It's in Queensland.
Yeah. Oh. You know what? I'm going to go Reds. I shouldn't, but I think I will.
Tess?
Yeah, no, I think I'm with Mitchie there, actually. I think they'll be dirty. They didn't put, like, this is a very proud Queensland team, and they'll be absolutely filthy. They didn't perform over here, and it'll be the one that they've kind of dropped and got away. So they'll all have the rocket up them for this week, you know. And Les Kiss, he'll be tweaking and changing a couple of little tiny things, but I don't think he'll need to really do too much. I reckon the players will be driving a lot of it. They'll be disappointed with how they performed. Yeah. And who knows? You know, the Brumbies coming off a big win. Maybe there's a. I wouldn't say the Brumbies are a complacent mob, but maybe one team will just be itching for that win more than the other.
Okay. Well, I'm going to go the Brums. I think they're in good touch, so I'll pick the Brums to beat the Reds. Then in Super W, the Waratahs against the Rebels on Friday. Saturday, the Drua against the Force Women. That's at 11:35. Then, unfortunately, Rosie McGeehan and Pia Tapsell, they're both out with season-ending injuries, Rosie and knee and Pia and elbow. But I don't know if that's Super W season-ending injuries or season-ending injuries. There's only two games left in the Super Rugby. So hopefully for them it's a minor thing, but knees and elbows never sound good. And then obviously the Reds and the Brumbies as well in the Super W. And then locally, the Challenge Cup got underway on Saturday. Now, the upsets we were hoping for didn't eventuate. Southern Lions 57-5 over the Kwinana Wolves. Soaks 78-0 over the Bunbury Barbarians.
Barbarians let us down.
Uni 85-0 over Rockingham. Calla 29-5 over Perth Bayswater. Wanneroo upsetting Wests 35-25. Probably the upset was Joondalup 35, Palmyra 0.
Against the reigning premiers.
Yeah. Cot 36, the Mandurah Pirates 14. And Heath Tessman can leave his boots in the cupboard for another week. Nettie's 81, Arcs 12.
Oh, it's a new dawn down the foreshore.
So are we saying it's a good idea, this Challenge Cup, given most of the community clubs have been knocked out in round one with big margins?
Not on those scores, but I still like the concept. And I know I spoke to the coach of the Manchester Pirates, and they were very excited and very keen about playing Cot, and they were 36-14. So I think, yeah.
They were competitive.
I still think it's a good idea. So, yeah. But, yeah, the scores, unfortunately, a couple of blowouts. And that'll take us to the mailbag. And Rugby WA, talking about boards and governance, Rugby WA, they've announced the appointment of a lady called Karina Tanvin-Barron to the Rugby WA board. She is replacing Charlie Fear. Not sure of her rugby background, but she's got a strong interest in community development and is looking forward to helping build the profile and support for rugby and its community within WA. She's got 30 years' experience as a lawyer, journalist, communication strategist and senior government advisor. So we wish her well. And then New South Wales fullback Max Jorgensen, he's knocked back an offer from the Roosters. He signed a two-year deal with Rugby Australia. That was on Tuesday. So it locks him in for the Lions Tour, but not the Rugby World Cup. Now, it was rumoured that Rugby Australia offered him 1.6 for 3 years, but he signed for two, which is a good move by him, because if he's living up to his hype and his potential, Rugby Australia, they'll be desperate to keep him for the World Cup and they'll sell the farm to keep him. So he's on 500K a year. Now, he's 19, hasn't played a test, had a few injuries. I read that Reece Walsh from the Broncos, he's on 450. His next contract will be massive. But is this, we were talking about with Jeff, do we pay these guys too much too soon? We're like a company that pays kids on its graduate program more than the CEO. Yeah. It just seems very odd.
Not prepared to call the bluff. That's, yeah.
Yeah, we've got to be prepared to let people go.
There's no way, there is no way in this world Max Jorgensen is worth $500,000 a year. No way in this world. Like, he's at, yes, he's got
He's worth that somewhere. He's worth that somewhere, but he's not worth that here, unfortunately.
Not here. No.
Yeah. And not now.
He hasn't done enough.
We're flat broke, and you're going all in on a 19-year-old kid.
Like, with injury concerns.
Like, yeah, he's got potential, but, you know, you look at the Waratahs game on the weekend, he was far from their best.
Yeah.
Far from it.
Yeah. And I think that's where, as Sticky was saying, Rugby Australia's got to say, this is all we can afford. We'd love to have you, but if you want to go, we wish you well.
Then we back the next guy coming through. Don't get me wrong.
Correct.
We should be retaining players like him, but we shouldn't be paying ridiculous sums of money, especially for back three players.
Hmm. Yeah.
Like, I don't want to sound disparaging to back three, but back three players should not be paid that sort of money.
Yeah, we got plenty of them.
They're not Joe Roffs and the Ben Tunes. Mm. I'm sorry, they're just not.
Yeah.
Yeah. Bailey Kunzel showed how easy it is on the weekend.
Yeah. Bailey Kunzel. What? Bailey Kunzel should be putting his hand up for where's my 500?
Where's my 500? I know. Right? And isn't that the
player of the week?
Everyone starts wanting more. So
yeah, it's just ridiculous.
Yeah. And then, as we mentioned during the year, so the Waratahs said they decide on Darren Coleman's future after round four. So it's now round five. The Tars are one from five. So it's been announced for the first time in the Waratahs' 150-year history, Rugby Australia will help decide the club's next coach. So the governing body is going to work with New South Wales Waratahs board to conduct a review of Darren Coleman's
bloody
performance
review.
As head
bloody
coach.
Bloody reviews.
And that's alongside a broader high-performance assessment of the club. But it gets better, Mitch Hardy. The review will be conducted in the coming weeks by an independent high-performance consultant.
Oh, God.
Will then report their findings to Rugby Australia's new Director of High Performance, Peter Horn, and the Waratahs board. So they should know this by this time next year, whether Darren Coleman's going to be re-signed or not. Like, what a convoluted, complicated
and expensive process
that we're going through now. No one's prepared to put their balls on the line and say,
We need an independent consultant review to tell us what to make a decision on.
Yeah.
Because we're not capable of making our own decisions, even though we're all paid executives to make decisions. We can't make one.
Yeah.
We need someone to tell us how to decide.
Just madness. Yeah. Okay. Madness. And then finally, Paul Cully had a bit of an article about, so World Rugby held a Shape of the Game conference or some meetings to try and work out how to speed the game up and make it more attractive. So he went through and got some stats. So the 2023 Rugby World Cup final, it ran for just over 106 minutes. This is an 80-minute game, went for 106 minutes. The 2011 decider, that lasted 89 minutes. So Real Rugby, they're aware that those extra 17 minutes of TMO checks, slow set piece setups, substitutions, injuries and so forth, they've changed the game and not for the better. So there was a couple of things they were talking about, looking at, not going to change, but they're discussing. One is the idea of removing the scrum option for free kicks. So if it's a free kick, you can't choose the scrum, which is good. You probably won't like that test. And then forcing your team.
I can't remember too many times where the teams have taken a scrum option or a free kick, really.
Well, they're going to remove that.
If it's like from a scrum, they'll usually take it. I reckon you should get rid of it. Play on. Let's go. Get the ball moving.
Let's go. Yeah. Well, then, short arms at breakdowns.
And then forcing a team to use the ball after a maul stops once rather than twice. So at the moment it stops, they go, you've got to move. So they're trying to speed. But again, they're only discussion points. Nothing will happen. It'll all stay the same. But they actually know they've got a problem because that was 17 minutes of nothing that happened in that World Cup final.
But the TMO is not the cause for the mauls going on.
Get rid of the TMO.
Yeah, that's what it is. Like they were giving them three chances at the maul back in 2011.
Mate,
I'll go back to it. Free kicks at breakdowns. Free kicks at breakdowns for just ruck infringements and, more short arm free kicks at scrum time.
Yeah, because they've got to do something.
Make a decision, get on with the game. That's what it's got to come to. How do we make quick decisions to enable the game to get on?
Mm.
That's what their principles around game time should be around. Not, let's do this over here because we'll put this up, but realistic, it's not going to make one damn bit of difference. Because how many short arms from scrums do we currently get? Maybe two a game?
Yeah.
I know. So you're going to maybe reduce it by 20 seconds.
Yeah.
Well, they got to pull some time back because it's just crazy. It's getting crazy.
They could be selling all that extra advertising time.
Oh, yeah.
They've got to think of a different
team going forward. Team going forward should get the put in.
Yeah. Although is it a problem because like I watched the NFL grand final. That was what 4 hours. The Super Bowl.
Yeah.
And I was quite happy. I was quite happy with that.
Did you know the NFL made nearly $50 million off the extra time because it went to extra time? The extra advertising they could sell that 5-minute block. I mean, $10 million a minute.
Well, it'd be nice if rugby had that sort of money rolling in for those extra 17 minutes and solve all the problems.
We need the games to go for 120 minutes. Longer. 180 minutes.
That's right.
Okay.
That's right. Wow. All right. Well, look, that'll do. I saw that Stukey's interesting. So it'll be interesting to see where that, if anything comes of that. But it's, as we mentioned, nice that people do care enough to have a crack. So thank you, Mitch. Good to see you.
Thank you, gents. You guys have yourselves a good Easter and enjoy your long weekend.
Thank you. Thank you, Tess. Good to see you.
Yeah, always. Thank you, gents. Look forward to another good weekend of rugby. Chocolate.
Yeah, yep. Go to Force.
See you guys here next week.
Absolutely. So thanks for everyone for listening and we will catch you next time on the Rugby Wrap.